Very much, Craig. And what Craig said about my tithing my time is true. I tithe my income for most of my life. And I was impressed at one point to additionally start tithing my time, which means every day I set my clock for 2.5 hours and I pray, I read the Bible, I read other religious materials. I have some quiet time after I pray. And I learned that if you want to communicate with God, pray, yes, but then be quiet and wait for God to speak to you so that it's a two-way conversation and not just a one-way conversation. And in that practice, I actually learned to be in prayer almost all the time. And so it was a wonderful experience to have that ability to be in almost constant communication with God throughout my life, no matter what I was doing. And like you said, it's true, as I would meditate, I would lose blocks of time, and an hour would go by, and I can't account for it. And so one night, when my heavenly experience happened, it was a normal night. I was not drinking alcohol. I don't drink alcohol. And no medications. It was not a bad day. It was a routine day. I went to bed on time, 10 to 11 o'clock. And I had this experience. I don't remember my ascension to heaven like I remember my descension. So I can't tell you about my ascension, but I will start my presentation with the first thing I remember being in heaven. And I remember being on what looked like a street, but it wasn't a street like we know it. There were no cars, no horses, and it wasn't paved. It was a slab of light. And you're going to hear this a lot. I'm going to refer to light everywhere because everything in heaven was made of light. But the most important thing about the starting of my experience is to know that we were walking. I say we, I seem to have a guide with me, a being in heaven. I don't know if I should call him an angel. I don't know exactly what they were. I was not told what they were. So I was with this being walking on this slab of light, and we were coming from the source of light that goes everywhere in heaven. So I don't know what that source of light was, but it was absolutely magnificent. There was so much light going up above us, and it was moving slower than what we know here is the speed of sound or speed of light, excuse me. And it was bright white. It had pieces of gold. It had streaks of maroon. It had streaks of purple. It was just absolutely amazing. And it was so thick with energy, you could actually hear it crackling like lightning does. It was like a million simultaneous bolts of lightning on the earth. But we were walking away from that and we were communicating with my guide and myself. And we weren't talking, we were communicating telepathically. I didn't see any mouth movement in my guide, I didn't see a face. They were wearing robe type clothing, if we can call it clothing, but the robe was actually made of light. And it draped like a robe does. I didn't see any extremities. I didn't see any of that. Everything was draped. And we were moving along this slab of light, but we weren't walking. There was no cadence. There was no stepping. It was just very smooth movement, like we were gliding or hovering. And so we were moving away from this light and towards some other people. There were single beings, there were couples of beings, there were groups of people hovering together. As I look out across the landscape, I could see elevation changes. I could see what might be landscaping or shrubs or trees, but it wasn't like we know landscaping on the earth. Guess what? It was all made of light, and it was very bright and vibrant and full of energy and full of love. And so we're continuing to move. And I've told you a little bit about what I saw, and I'll tell you more, but I really, most importantly, need to tell you what I felt. I felt absolute, total acceptance and love and encouragement and well-being. God's love in heaven was just overwhelming. And I really don't know how, in earthly terms, to express how much love I felt from God. I mean, it was everywhere. I felt love from other beings, from trees, if that's what they were, or just in the air. I mean, it was ambient. And just a wonderful, wonderful, warm feeling to experience. And I never felt that on the earth. So we continued to move toward this group of people. And I noticed in front of me this fantastic being. I mean, he was tall. He was big. He was dressed like a warrior, but not a warrior like we know it on the earth. It was a heavenly, holy warrior.
David, can you speak up just a little bit? I'm sorry.
Yes, I can. And I'll move closer to the mic. Is that better?
Yes, that's much better. Thank you.
Okay. So I was moving toward this wonderful being, and he was a heavenly warrior being, but much different from what we know a warrior to be on the earth. I really can't describe what he looked like. I just don't have the words. And he was bright. He was brilliant. He was full of white light and purples and gold, and his aura just went up out of sight. And a fabulous, fabulous being. And I never met that person. We never made eye contact. We never did the equivalent of shaking hands. I don't know what they do in heaven to greet each other. But I was guided around that being and guided off to the side into what was the heavenly version of a room. But again, I keep saying this, it's not like an earthly room. The walls were made up of light, and the walls went straight up. There was no roof, and you don't need a roof in heaven, I figured out, because there's not an atmosphere in heaven like we have here. There's no rain, no clouds, no blue sky. Everything was light. And you could look up standing inside this building and see light coming overhead, over top of this building, from the light source that I just left. And that light, from that light source, just curved around and kind of surrounded everything that I could see. And it was the top cap for everything in heaven that I saw. And I could look through the walls of this building and see the source of light far away. I could see that huge warrior being that I just passed by, and other beings gathering around and seemingly communicating outside of this building. And my guide led me to an area in this building that looked like a table, but it wasn't a table. All it was a slab of light. And we came up right next to that. And I noticed something bulky and kind of odd sitting on the table. And I didn't know what it was. I had never seen anything like it before. I was in heaven. Everything was different. So I asked my guide what that was sitting on the slab of light. And my guide said, "Well, David," I don't think they used my name, but I was actually informed of what it was. And they said, "That is food that is intended for you." And my guide said, I need to instruct you on how to consume this food." And so my guide did. My guide instructed me. And there was nothing like how we consume food on the earth. We don't pick it up. We don't open our mouth and put it in our mouth and chew it and swallow it. Totally different. And to this day, I don't even know how I consume that food. But my guide told me, and that food seemed to just hover up from off the table. And somehow it entered my body. And I just can't tell you how that happened because I don't understand it. But I'm telling you, I get emotional sometimes when I talk about this. I can't help it. But that food was absolutely incredible. And I have never tasted anything like that in my entire life. As soon as it entered my body, I felt my body warm. I could tell that it was interacting with my body. And things were happening. I didn't know what. And my guide said to me, "David, we have this food here for you to be healed." My guide said, "This food is healing you right now." And I thought to myself, I said, "Healing me? What's wrong with me? What are you healing me of?" And I knew I had some high cholesterol and some high triglycerides, but it wasn't life-threatening. So I was very grateful that they were healing me. But I'm a simple earthling. I'm a sinner. And if heaven tells me that I need to be healed from something, then I'm not going to argue with them, because it's heaven. And I could tell that I was being healed. I mean, it felt fabulous. It tasted fabulous. It was just an incredible experience for somebody to have. And I asked my guide if I could have more of that. And my guide said, "Yes, you know, take as much as you want."
Craig Miller on top.
And so.
Yeah, Craig Miller's there.
And David.
David Larson. And then there's a whole host of them out here.
Okay. So there were many people in this room. And off to my left was seemingly a line of people. It was sort of like a head table on Earth, where there were dignitaries and maybe some high-ranking officers, I'm not sure, but they were all lined up to my left. And they seemed to be facing out to an audience where there was a large mass of other beings. And they were facing toward this line of dignitaries on what seemed to be the head table. And then the most incredible thing happened. Most incredible. A being in the middle of this line rose up. They didn't scoot their chair back and stand up. They just rose like they were floating. And that being in the middle of the head table started to sing. It was amazing. Totally amazing. The clarity of that voice, the volume of that voice, the quality, the vibrato, it was an absolutely perfect voice. It was the earthly equivalent of a male baritone. And everybody in heaven must have heard that voice singing. You could probably hear that voice outside of heaven. But he sang in words that I didn't understand. And I kept listening and listening. And I was just so impressed with everything that I was hearing. And then suddenly it kind of startled me. He started singing words in English that I knew. And the words in English were, "I gave my all for you." And he sang that, and then it sounded like he was starting into another verse, and he continued to sing in the language that I didn't understand. And he may have sung a couple verses, and then I thought that was impressive enough, but my goodness, that whole group of people out in what seemed to be the audience was not an audience. It was a choir. And everybody rose. There was no cue. There was no motion. There was no sound. Everybody just knew what to do. Incredible. And they started singing with this baritone at the head table. There was no director. Everybody was absolutely together on cue. It was perfect. And the volume, oh my. You had to hear this volume, I don't know, all over the universe maybe, but it was absolutely incredible. And perfect voices, perfect tones. And then I realized something. They were singing an awful lot of harmony parts. I'm a museum. I'm not a museum, I'm a musician. And I've been singing in choirs all my life. And you know what? I realized something. The musical scale in heaven is longer than the musical scale on earth. It has more notes, which gives it more opportunities for harmonies. And I don't have perfect pitch, but I know it was a long scale, and I know what I heard. And I wish I could identify it perfectly, but it doesn't matter. It was just absolutely amazing. And the choir sang also, "I gave my all for you." And they sang several verses. Some of it I didn't understand, some of it I did. And when they finished their heavenly equivalent of a song, just like they came up, they all went down together. And I found myself communicating with some of the people at that head table. And I don't know what we were talking about. I think I had input into the conversation, if I recall correctly. But I also think that our conversation was so far over my head that I either didn't know then what we were talking about, or I don't remember it today. But it was powerful. It was high, high level, holy, loving, pure love and peace conversation. And that's all I felt through my entire visit there, was love and peace and acceptance. It was a wonderful, wonderful feeling. And then I spoke words that I remember now. And I didn't want to say these words. I don't even think I spoke these words. I said to everybody there, "Thank you very much for my visit, but I have to go now." I didn't want to go. Are you kidding? I didn't want to leave heaven. I had even forgotten about earth. And here I am telling everybody that I have to go. And I'm leaving to go back to a sinful, dark earth. So I felt myself being withdrawn from God's presence, from Jesus' presence, from the presence of all these beings in front of me. I didn't want to go, but I was being pulled against my will. And what happened next took about, I don't know, 3 or 5 seconds maybe. But I can't describe it in 3 to 5 seconds in real time. So I'm going to start the 5 seconds now. And I'll tell you at the end of the 5 seconds when I get to it. But I started leaving the earth. I started leaving heaven. And I was traveling at a tremendous rate of speed. And it appeared as though I was traveling through the inside of a tube of light. There was light just whizzing by me incredibly fast. This big, huge white tunnel, this big pipe. Looking at the side of the pipe from the inside. And as I started to decelerate, I paid attention and I noticed something. I was not inside of a tube. It was not a solid piece of light on the inside of a tube. It was made up of little bitty pieces of light, billions of them, billions. And I was traveling so fast that all these little bitty pieces of light were streaming together and whizzing by me, or I was whizzing by them, and it made it look like a solid tube. So what was that? It had to be stars and other suns. Was I traveling through space? Did I travel through the universe, through all these, witnessed all these different suns? I don't know what else to think. Anything but that. And So I was continuing to decelerate and decelerate, and but I was still moving. I'm telling you, I was moving. And so I started to recognize things. I recognized my solar system, and then I approached the Earth. I recognized the Earth. I recognized North America. And wow, there's my town. And there's my neighbor. There's my neighborhood. There's my house. That's my roof. And next, I was hovering at about ceiling level inside my home. And I was looking down onto my body that was in my bed, seemingly asleep. And I saw myself go down from the ceiling level and re-merge with my body. And at that time, I woke up and I was cold. I mean, I was cold like I've never been cold. My bones were cold. My joints were frozen. I couldn't move. And I was shivering. My teeth were chattering. And I was just miserable. And I wanted to get up and take a hot shower or something just to help me warm up. But I couldn't walk. I couldn't move. I couldn't get out of bed. And I had no choice but to just lay there in hopes that my body would warm up over time. And I don't know how long it was, but it took some time. But I finally was able to get myself out of bed and hobble to the next room, to the bathroom, and I was holding furniture all the way because I didn't want to fall. I was very unstable. I was shivering. I was cold. I could hardly move my joints. Somehow I got to the tub, ran some hot water, and was able to lower my body into that bath of hot water. It felt so good. And the hot water didn't last long. My cold body just made the hot water cold very quickly. So I drained it and ran another bath of hot water and decided to try to get out. And my goal was to sit down at my computer and write down what just happened to me. I didn't know if it was a dream. I didn't know what it was. If it was a dream, I wanted to get it down on my computer so that I wouldn't forget it. And so I struggled to get out of the bathtub. I put on a jogging suit. I put on my robe. I wrapped two blankets around me. I was still cold. But I made it to my home office and sat down at the computer. I could hardly key. My fingers were trembling. I was really struggling, but I was committed to just make abbreviated notes, if that's all I could do, to write down thoughts and high points of the experience that I just had. And in writing that, I suddenly realized, well, wait a minute. This is not a dream. Why am I so cold? Why would I wake up from a dream and be this cold and not be able to move my joints? And I had static electricity in my chest and my anterior thighs, and things were just not right. I've never experienced these kinds of things in my life before. And so I looked around the room where I was, and It looked absolutely horrible. It was dark. It was dirty. I'm a pretty good housekeeper when I want to be. And my house was fine. But I tell you, to me, after being in heaven, it was just nasty, dirty, and dark. And I didn't want to be there. I cannot express to you enough that I did not want to be back on the earth. When I was in heaven, I forgot about the earth. I forgot about sin. I was temporarily involved with life in heaven, with sinlessness, and just perfect everything. But here I am, now back on the earth. Why, God, why did you send me back? You know, did I say something wrong? Was this your plan from the beginning? What am I going to do now? How can I live my life back on this earth now? What do you want me to do? I want to be a messenger for you, but you're going to have to tell me what you want me to do. Right now, I'm confused. So I couldn't work that day. I couldn't sleep. So I did something stupid. I got in the car. I was crying. I was mad. And I was cold still, still shivering. But I decided it was a good idea to get in my car and drive somewhere. And the reason I drove is because I wanted to get to the highest altitude in the area. It seems foolish now, and it seems foolish when I say it, but I was absolutely driven to find high altitude, as high as I could, to get back as close to heaven as I could. I understand the differential. You know, I was in Tennessee. The highest point in Tennessee is 6,643 feet. That's nowhere close to heaven. But if I could get there, I would have been happy, because I knew that it would have been the highest point and the closest I could get back to God. So I couldn't get to that point realistically, but I did go to the highest point in the area, and I go there frequently. And usually it's beautiful, but it wasn't beautiful on that day. It wasn't beautiful anymore. I stayed in that high point in that beautiful park place, and I talked to God. I prayed, "What do you want of me? You know, why did you send me back to earth?" And pretty soon the sun was coming up. Like any other day, it's beautiful. I would have been there in awe at the colors, you know, that beautiful sunrise color. But on that day, it was ugly. It was dark. It was sinful. It was nothing. And I was so disappointed. The place that I loved for so long is now ugly to me. And so I struggled. I was angry with God for sending me back. I was angry with God for not giving me direct instructions on why he sent me back and what he wanted me to do. And, you know, it's like, God, I was up there. If you were going to send me back, why didn't you tell me why you were doing it and what you wanted me to do? I'm willing to work for you, but I'm a little bit confused right now. So, I couldn't work for days, but I realized that I had to get on with my life, because I'm an earthling again. And so I didn't want to tell anybody about my heavenly experience, or I should say I was cautious about telling anybody, because I didn't think anybody would believe me. And I was a professional, and I didn't want my reputation to be scarred. So I didn't tell anybody for a long time, and years. And finally, I told a few friends, and I had different responses from my friends. And so I was looking for any kind of a hint. I was praying for guidance from God to give me a direction in my life now. What am I going to do now? And so one of my friends has a high-end Native American art gallery. And I went in to see her, and I walked in the front door, and there was this beautiful ethnic flute and harp playing in the overhead sound system. And I walked up to my friend, Kathy, "What is that? That is just beautiful music." And she said, "Well, a Native American walked in here just a few minutes ago, and he gave me these CDs to sell for him. And this is the title CD. I just put it in. You're hearing the title song." And I said, "Let me see that CD." So she gave me the CD case. The title of the CD was, "I Gave My All for You." Wow. Is this it? Is this the answer of what God intends for me now? And so I said, "Where is this man?" And she said, "I don't know him. He just came in from Nashville." She said, "There's an address on the CD cover." So I wrote him. I tried to find his phone number. I tried to find email. I tried to find anything. I wrote him a letter, but I got no response. And so that turned out to be a dead-end road. One of my close friends is a Sioux shaman, lives in the Northwest. He invited me up there. I told him my story. And he said, "David, there's a man I want you to meet. He is a medicine man for the Sioux Nation. He's not far from here. I can take you there." So I agreed, and we went there. And I was thinking the whole time, is this the direction I'm supposed to go? I had this hint from my friend with the music and the name on the CD. Now I'm directed to go see a medicine man. God, what do you have for me? This seems kind of silly for me. I was in heaven. You don't get any better than that. So why am I being directed toward musicians and medicine men for the Sioux Nation? I didn't get it. I was kind of hurt, really. And so I met this medicine man. His name was Yellowhawk. Turned out he was a Vietnam veteran like me. And we had a lot in common. We had a lot to talk about. And he interviewed me for 24 hours. No food, no sleep, just talking. And he saw my PTSD from the war and my survivor's guilt. And he said, "David, I think we can help you." He said, "I want to do a sweat for you tomorrow night." He said, "Be back here at a certain time, and we'll have some other Sioux people here, about six, and we'll do a sweat in your honor." So I showed up, everything was prepared. We entered the sweat lodge, and Yellow Hawk positioned me right next to him. And come to find out that Yellow Hawk was communicating with his son, who was the chief medicine man in Canada at the Sioux Nation. And they were communicating during this sweat. And so Yellow Hawk said, David, don't look at this exercise. It's very powerful, and you should not see it. So I closed my eyes. I didn't look, didn't peek. I could hear him moving, chanting different chants. And at the end of it, he spoke to me directly. And he said that the medicine men and the master sweat in the Sioux Nation have reviewed your life, reviewed your experiences in the Vietnam War and your life after. And Yellow Hawk said, you're a great, great warrior, and you're a great person. And he said, we as a nation would like to invite you to be adopted into our nation as a Sioux. They asked if I accept that, and I said, yes, of course. And they gave me the name of Wambali Iskma, which in English means eagle's wing. And they said, if you participate in a vision quest, then you can change your name to whatever you want it to be. And I told them, no, I don't want to change my name. I like my name. And during the experience, I could feel my spine straighten. My body got warm. My body tingled. I don't know what it was. It's an experience I've never had before. And they told me that I was being healed from my PTSD. For months after, I did feel much better from my PTSD, but it really didn't last all that long. But I was very appreciative to them to treat me in that way and to accept me into their nation. From there, I went on to Yosemite National Park to begin work at Glacier Point as a U.S. park ranger, an interpretive ranger. I guide hikes, I talk to people, I give speeches, give bear talks in the campground, search and rescue, I'm an EMT. And it was there for about 5 years. But that first year in 2009, I was on the sidewalk talking to maybe 100 people. And I noticed in the corner of my eye a woman that came into my field of vision. And I looked over to her, and she had an aura that was incredible. It was white, it was purple, it was gold, it was maroon, and it went all the way up into the sky out of sight. And I thought to myself, wow, who is this? And we made eye contact, and I told my audience, I said, please excuse me, but I have to go talk to this woman. And so I went over there, and the first thing I said was, who are you? And she said, I am here to give you a message. She said, that great warrior that you saw in heaven when you were there was your own personal guardian angel. He protected you during the Vietnam War. He protected you many times after the war. And I told her, yes, I know that. And she said, that's your angel. And she said, he lives in five places on this earth when he visits earth. And she said, Glacier Point is one of his favorite places when he comes to earth. And she actually pointed and she said, right over there, that block so-and-so place. And I said, yes, I know that place. I said, I go there to study the Bible and read and pray and quiet time myself. I know that place. Well, she said, that's his home. And she said, he has an earthly name. And his earthly name is Hercules. And so she said, you know, I am a member of the I Am Church. That was the name of it, I Am. First time I heard of it, I don't know anything about it. And she said, we want you there. We want you to visit our church. We want you to be a member of our church. And so I looked over to my people that I was talking to. I was feeling a little bit guilty about being away from them, I guess. And I looked back to the woman that was standing right beside me, and she was gone. And we were out in the middle of an open area. And the walk distance from where we were standing to a secluded area on the trail was a long ways. She didn't have enough time to travel that distance in the time that I looked away at my audience. So I don't know what happened to her. But she gave me a message that was helpful. I gained more information from her, if it's true, from about my heavenly experience. And I learned about my angel living close to where I live. I thought that was unique. And I looked up the I Am Church. There was one in California in Los Angeles. And I just did not feel comfortable about going there. It was not my thing. It was not something I wanted to do. A lot of people say I should have. You know, maybe that was a direction from God. Maybe that's true. But it's just not part of who I am. And so I never visited that church. But shortly after that, it was 5 years later, I retired as a U.S. Ranger and went home and retired and got into my therapy for PTSD and everything. But I never knew exactly what to do with this information. And maybe even today, I'm not even clear. It wasn't until about a year ago that I even created a video telling the story that I just told you. At that time, I think I was 71. And I thought, well, you know, I'm getting up there in years, and this story needs to live on. I don't want this story to die with me. And so I created an hour video telling this story. I put it on YouTube and had a tremendous, tremendous response. And I also wrote a little booklet, and it's available on Amazon. I'm not here to sell you a book. I think I make a penny every time I sell one of these books, but it's only because Amazon requires that I price it the way I have to. So I'm just interested in making another avenue by which you can learn this story and tell this story and give my story to your friends and anybody you want to. This is a short little booklet. It's only a couple dollars on Amazon. I gave my all for you. And look it up and give it to your friends. And if you're impressed to do so, I prayed over this book. I asked God to bless it. I said, send it wherever you want it to go, God, and help this book to change lives and encourage people that there is a God and that there is a heaven. And so I have more that I can say, but I guess I'm ready to open up Q&A. And so however you want to do that, Craig, go for it.
Hi, David, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
We may have some questions from here in the audience. I have some questions. Could you tell people a little bit about your experience in Vietnam that causes you survivor's guilt?
Oh, man. I didn't see that one coming. Well, I was, I don't know if I can get through this. I was a conscientious objector in the war. That means I didn't train with a weapon. I didn't carry a weapon. I didn't kill people. And I was a medic in the emergency room. And we were very, very busy. And I was also a medic on dust-off. Dust-off is a medevac helicopter. We fly from the emergency room out into the field, pick up the wounded and the dead, and bring them back and treat them, save their life. When it was time for me to go home, the dust-off unit had a going-away party for me. And I was the only surviving medic in that unit. And they gave me a surviving medic party. And when I left to go home, they didn't have a medic. After that, the next day, they flew me to Benoit, which is a big city on the coast where the commercial jets come in. And I went into the hangar where I was instructed to wait for my flight. And I approached the loadmaster. He was a captain. And I said, "Where is everybody?" And he spun around. And he said, "Rose," he said, "Are you Rose?" And he saluted me and he said, "You're it, sir." So out of my entire unit from training, from basic training and AIT, advanced individual training, all my buddies died, except for me. And I went back on that plane alone. And I think about it every day. Can't help it. Can't help it.
There's a question. Did you recognize any family members during your experience? Was anybody that you met there a family member?
No, I didn't meet a family member. I did not see or did not recognize or did not remember faces. So I couldn't tell you what anybody looked like, facial features, eye color, anything. I didn't see anything like that. Every being was just draped in light. And I couldn't tell you what anybody looked like.
Okay. Another question. I'm interested to know how long this world seemed subpar and dirty after your experience. It seemed like it aggravated you terribly for a while afterwards.
I think about it every day, even today. I mean, I go to beautiful places. I traveled the country for about 5 years. And I went to some beautiful places in earthly terms, but every time I went there, yeah, it was beautiful in earthly terms, but I was disappointed every single time. And I could not think about anything but heaven. Even today, I was sitting on the front porch and a deer walked by. And as beautiful as that deer was, I was impressed, but I was reminded, this is ugly. And I just have a different perspective of the earth now. I have a different perspective of life. I have a different perspective of relationships with people. I have very low tolerance for people. And I actually live in seclusion, Craig. And my VA doctors have rated me as unemployable and unfit for society. And I'm 100% disabled from all that. So I struggle with life now, actually.
Oh, my. Did you ever find, you search for the individual who made the CD. Did you ever find that person?
I never found that person. I was very disappointed. I used to live in Nashville. I know musicians there. I know a lot of people there. And I searched out for this person. Nobody knew about this person. I couldn't find him.
Wow.
I searched. Another thing that I didn't mention, immediately after, when I was doing my computer notes, I went to all the song title agencies, and ACMI, BMI, I can't remember exactly what they're called, but I did not find that title anywhere. So that title I gave my all for you was not listed anywhere.
It's too bad you didn't have a recording device you could bring back. So what did you ever find out what your mission is?
Well, other people have told me what my mission is.
Oh.
And I do a lot of volunteer veteran work. I mean, a lot. And I've helped many veterans. I've helped many veteran organizations. And I've heard many times in all the veteran work that I do, David, this is your mission. This is what you're supposed to do. People who knew about my heavenly experience have said, this is why God sent you back and healed you, because he wasn't finished with you. And so I can't over express how much I do for veterans. I mean, all day long, I'm doing something. And usually it's for veteran organizations and not individual veterans. So I think big picture and help the organizations develop so that they can help veterans, and lots of them.
Well, this has been fascinating. I have questions, but I don't want to keep people to hear too long. Could your lost time and your last experience have been the result of some disease process that you were healed of in your experience?
Well, I don't know. I didn't think before I had the earthly experience that I had a deadly disease. I wasn't ill. I felt good when I went to bed that day. So the answer, I think, is no. I don't know of any real illness that I was healed of. I don't know. Maybe my heart failed. Maybe, I don't know. I stopped breathing. I don't know what happened. And another thing, Craig, for 10 years, I didn't even realize the possibility that I died that night. It was a friend who heard my story and said, David, you must have died that night in your sleep and went to heaven, and God sent you back to do what you're doing now. And she said, you were cold when you reemerged with your body. Your joints were stiff. Perhaps you had some rigor mortis already, and you had to warm up from that. And so she said, I think that you died and had to fall out from death and continue with your life. So I don't know why, but for 10 years, even being a medical person, I never once even thought of that. But it makes sense, sort of. So
one more question just came across the chat.
All right.
How old were you when you had this experience? And did you ever go to the doctor after to see how you were physically?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking that. Let's see. That was 07. So I was probably about 56. And so it's interesting that within a week after my experience, I already had a pre-scheduled checkup with my doctor. And we did labs, and I went in following my labs, and my doctor came in the room all happy. Man, she was so happy. She said, David, whatever you are doing, keep doing it. She said, your labs are good. They're all perfect. And your triglycerides were 400. Your cholesterol was 280. And your pressure was up. But she said, it all looks good. Keep doing it. So I thought at the time about telling her what happened, but I decided not to. I said, no, that won't work. I'm not going to take a chance telling that to my doctor.
Probably a wise choice.
Yeah.
You couldn't hear that question, I'm sure, but...
No, I heard someone talking, but I couldn't hear words.
Okay, so she thought, or her question was, since you saw heaven and you understood the peace that you had, did that give you any peace about your buddies who were killed in Vietnam and were likely in heaven as well?
Excellent question. I guess the answer is no, because I didn't actually think about that, ma'am. I should have. I can see it clearly now. I should have thought of that and realized. But I mean, like I said before, I didn't see any of them. So I don't know. I just kind of separated my survivor's guilt from heaven and my PTSD from heaven. And I compartmentalized each one of those, and they don't cross over, I guess.
Well, it takes a while to process and all that, I'm sure.
Well, that's the best way I can answer it. I don't have any magical answer for you. Maybe you help me with something, ma'am. I need to think about that and pray about it and try to put that all together. Thank you for that.
Well, David, this has been a great experience. We really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Yes, sir.
And I feel a great deal of sympathy for veterans myself. My wife's a veteran. I'm retired military. So thank you for your work and in your service in that area. So with that, we really appreciate your being here, and I hope that you have great success in all that you do.
Well, it was my honor to be here, and I appreciated telling my story to all of you, and I appreciate the invite. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Everybody's clapping. So thank you very much, David.
Okay. Thank you.